adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
La luna appesa alla parete, la notte a me mi viene sete, fammi bere amore, fammi bere, fammi bere un po' di te. Ti stringerò, giuro che ti farò male, nella notte io mi accenderò, la tua stella sarò.
And welcome to Rhett This Way. I'm your host this week, Paolo Mangoni. Michael Dangelo is off this week. So welcome to Julian Gigi Dangelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
And Mr. Chris Pacelli.
Hello, everybody.
So how is everyone doing tonight?
I think I've recovered.
Recovered from the weekend?
Me too.
Julian?
Yeah. I didn't have the worst weekend compared to you guys, but...
Actually, you did.
I would... disagree.
No, okay, we'll get to that later.
We
but
will.
So that was Ti Stringerò by Nara. So I guess Julian and I will explain that slightly a bit later. So Ti Stringerò means to hold. So Julian, I guess you'll understand why that song was played, right?
Of course.
Yeah. So I guess arts and cultures are doing arts and cultures, or because Michael's not here, so we don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, it would really just be you talking because Julian and I are. I'll speak. I'm an amateur with arts and cultures, yeah. So I don't want to speak for Julian.
No, I also am as well. I'd just be, unless it's Simpsons related, I got nothing.
Anyway, so I don't know if has anyone seen the Young Pope or the New Pope?
No.
Negative.
No, it's an
this
HBO
is what I'm talking
special.
About.
Yeah, I know it's on HBO.
It's on HBO. Yeah, so there is one scene where he was given an album by Nada, which is the artist that I played, and so it just came to my mind related to arts and culture. So I just wanted to point that out. So again, that's where the songs come from. It's just related to Italian musical history and 20th century, at least, obviously, but there's a reason why we play each song every week. You don't play it for the sake of playing, and we play it for the sake of talking points, I guess that's the best way to put it. But let's get into it. The first game, which was, I believe, was on Friday, was Salernitana Lecce. Lecce, I believe, what got their first win of the season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. I know they get a point last week, I think.
I think they did, yeah.
So the Fed's a late equalizer and he was the one on target again.
Yeah, so he scored again. And then Castai scored again as well, or actually he didn't score again, but he played well against Inter if I'm not mistaken in the first week of the season. And then Salernitana got their only goal of the game through an own goal. So that was the first game of the season. First game of the round. Next game was Empoli in another central derby, north central derby. Empoli got the only goal of the game with Filippo Bandinelli. That's Chris. That was our sleeper for fantasy culture.
Yep.
Fantasy culture. So Empoli got the 1-0 win there. Wasn't that Thiago Motta's first game as well?
Yes, I think so, yes, yes.
Yeah, so I guess you can beat that guy, no? Yeah, so,
only you can, Paulo.
honestly, again, I The reason why I dislike him with intense passion was the fact that he should not have played that 2012 final.
I mean, okay. I understand your point, but I'm also going to point out in that 2012 final that Chiellini went off after 35 minutes for the same injury. So,
yes, but the thing is that, like, he was, I'm positive that the fact that he was already in, like, he was, like, injured before, like, he shouldn't have started because he was injured.
Correct? No, he was subbed on. Or Chiellini, I mean. Chiellini started. Thiago Motta was subbed on and got hurt shortly thereafter. And then yeah, Italy were down a man.
What's worse, though?
I mean, to me, that's on the coach to have two players who are injured. One yeah. plays half an hour, one plays 10 minutes. That's, exactly.
Anyway, yeah. so, like, that's neither here or there. That's just me venting in terms of... And also, who gives a fuck that there's international break?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's our international talk for this week. So, let's move on. Next game on the list is Spezia Sampdoria, and it's actually our goal of the week. So, here's the goal from Sabiri that caught all our eyes.
Augello. Cambia bene con Djuricic, ancora Augello. Sabiri ci prova improvvisamente e trova un super gol! Undicesimo minuto! Cosa ha fatto Sabiri? Una rete fantastica all'improvviso! Pallone sotto l'incrocio, 1-0 Samp. Primo gol in campionato per Sabiri. Una rete fantastica! E poi l'abbraccio con tutti i compagni!
So that was Sabiri with his first goal of the season. It was an outstanding goal. I think it was, what, like 25, 35 yards out. A very high parabola that dipped into the far post. Outstanding goal. But it wasn't enough, actually. Sampdoria lose that game to Spezia 2-1. Which puts Marco Giampaolo under pressure going into the international break. The next game for Saturday was Torino-Sassuolo, and Sassuolo come away with the 1-0 victory with Agustin Alvarez scoring in the 93rd minute. So that leads to Sunday and the fourth
Sorry,
game.
I just want to yeah. touch Go back ahead. On Alvarez. I don't know if you saw, but it was his first Serie A goal, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
yeah. And he actually went over and made, like, the heart.
Yep.
With his
yep.
hands, but it was to the opposing
Curva. To the Torino fans, yeah.
yeah.
Which I think Ferrari was there and pulled them away, saying, like, that's not our fans. And that's what happens when, you know, you're still a young player and you don't know which side the Curva is on. But again, I mean, you got the 3 points. I think the fans don't give a shit as long as he scores goals, so. And we'll get to that later to other teams as well. So so the first game on Sunday was Udinese Inter. So I know Julian, you had something to talk about there.
So Inter actually got off to a good start in this one. Barella scored a beauty of a free kick within the first 5 minutes, and you think it's going to be kind of smooth sailing from that point on, but. That was definitely not the case. Udinese is in great form, and honestly, they pressured Inter very well. They forced Mkhitaryan and Bastoni to be cautioned before the 30th minute. And Inzaghi oddly decided to sub both of them in the 30th minute, which we'll come back to after the fact. Udinese did score, before that to make it 1-1. And then it was kind of touch and go from that point on. Inzaghi again with his subs. He's been kind of off with them all season. Decides to take off Acerbi, who surprisingly was actually Inter's best defender on the day, and throw on De Vrij for the last 15 minutes or so to kind of close out the game. And he did the exact opposite. He gave away a very, very, very cheap corner. And then lost his man on said corner for Udinese to get the 2-1 goal. And then they put the dagger at the end to make it 3-1 through Arslan. I think the second goal was I might be butchering his name. Biol? Biol?
Yeah.
Good enough.
Slovenian. Yeah, and Biol. The first goal was a Skriniar own goal. Now again, Inter, they've kind of had an up and down season so far. I don't want to take anything away from Udinese. They are in great form. They played a great game. They definitely deserve the win. And Zaghi, again, very questionable with the subs. Taking off Acerbi was 100% not the right move in this call. The 30th minute substitutions were also very strange. I know they were on yellow cards, but if you think that's that much of an issue, sub them at halftime. I don't know. I said earlier on this year, like, if Inter want to compete, they need their star players to step up. They need Barella to be the player we know he can be. They need Lautaro to be the player we know he can be. And quite frankly, even Skriniar for that matter, and quite frankly, none of them have been that consistently yet throughout the season. So that's why not all of my blame goes on Inzaghi. But yeah, the subs were strange again. And unfortunately, Inter now have 3 losses in the first 7 games.
So what's interesting, so I just want to shift this conversation to the Udinese side. So I read something interesting over the past few days. So this is Udinese's best start since the season that Sotil, which is Udinese's manager, played for Udinese as a player, which was in 2000-2001. So the Udinese have 16 points after 7 games, which is the best total since that season.
Like Di Natale would have been there, no?
No, I don't think so.
Jesus,
I think
Di Natale, even before that.
I think Di Natale was there after that. I'm pretty sure it was like
2001.
So Till was there from 2000-2001. I'm pretty sure Di Natale was after that. I'm going to look that up. Hmm. But I'm pretty sure Di Natale was like 2004.
Hold on, I'm trying to...
Let's see.
Squad. Hey, Morgan DeSantis.
Yeah, use that.
Roma legend.
Yeah, Sotil was there. Suli Muntari, David Pizarro, Vincenzo Iaquinta. Yeah, no Di Natale yet, but...
Yeah.
Okay. Giampiero Pinzi. Yeah, they had some names there.
Yeah, so he wasn't there during that season per se, but
Spalletti was their manager.
Yeah, in 2005. Yeah, you know that was a good team. That team that made the Champions League, I believe, was like 2005-2006. That was a good team. So yeah, like yeah, exactly. So Di Natale didn't join Udinese until 2004. So that was prior to Tony Di Natale, and that was with like, if I'm not mistaken, I'm gonna look that up. But I just want to make sure, because this is important. Because I know Oliver Bierhoff played for
Udinese.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Huh.
No, he wasn't there. I have that. The season pulled up.
Oh yeah, so he's left to he was at Milan. He was already at Milan before that. So yeah, I mean, you know, a couple of minutes should be given to Udinese to you know, to give credit to the start that they had. I mean, no one. I remember we were talking about how the fact that they kept Udoji before the start of the season because there was rumors during the transfer market that Udoji was going to leave. Outright, and we were talking about how the fact that Udinese were able to keep him was going to pay dividends throughout the seasons. I don't think we thought that it would pay this much of a dividend.
I agree. I would just add, just to play devil's advocate, I mean, I think it was a good decision for Udinese to keep him technically on loan for this year. At the same time, you could also argue that if he were to play this entire season the way he's played the first, you know, 7 or 8 match days, that his value would have gone up and they could have got even more for him next summer had they been able to hold off this summer. Now, I know there's a lot of what ifs in there, but just something that could have happened if they were able to postpone his sale for another summer.
It's possible. I'm just going to take a look at it as contract, because it's possible that
to see when it was going to expire.
There was still another year for sure, because I know both Juve and Inter were kind of kicking tires earlier on in the summer, but I think Juve was adamant they wanted to keep him for another year.
I think it was going to expire at the end of next season, so you
they could have sold him this summer if they wanted to.
Yeah, but it's like. Napoli with Koulibaly, right? Napoli sold Koulibaly for 40 million. That's because it was Koulibaly. But usually a player that's going into the last year of his contract usually reduces in value.
Or you do what Torino did with Bremer and extend the contract knowing
sell him. Yeah. But that's a good point. But I don't think Udinese gave Udoji the fact that, you know, the benefit of the doubt, right?
Yeah.
But again, it was a good move on their part, because who knows? Maybe they'll make Europe like they did with Di Natale against Arsenal. Remember that? I think we all remember that round.
Sanchez was still there. I think they sold him, like, he helped them get into Europe, and then they sold him, I think, before they actually played in Europe.
Yeah. And I remember watching that round, those two games, and hoping, because that was when Italy was still would have to qualify for the fourth spot in the Champions League. And of course, that's not the case. So, I mean, if they do make, let's say hypothetically, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but hypothetically, they make Europe, they don't have to do any qualifications for the Champions League out of fourth spot. So, right. Already there, it's a benefit from qualifying to the Champions League. So we'll see. Again, like, it would take us back, all of us, to our youth, and to see, you know, like a player or like a team with an Antonio Di Natale type player, which I would assume today would be De La Feo. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I feel like more Raspadori, but if you had to pick someone at Udinese, it's probably the best one.
Raspadori.
Yeah.
Raspadori's on Napoli.
I know, that's what I just said, is I feel like Raspadori is the better comparison, but if you have to pick somebody from Udinese.
Well, no, I'm talking about Udinese in general. Like, a player that plays on Udinese and is considered like a bandiera, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to me, that's Raspadori, in my opinion. So anyway, I think we've gone on enough for Udinese. Like, again, 16 points in 7 games. I think that's all the merit to Sutil. Everyone thought he would be, you know, struggling mid-table. I know we all did, but to be up in the top after 7 games, I know we discussed with Michael the first 10 games. We don't want to look at the table, but for Udinese's sake, I think it's a benefit to look at the table. So the next game on that Sunday was Fiorentina Verona. So Fiorentina scored 2 goals. A corner scored the first goal, and then Nico Gonzalez scored in the 90th minute to round out the score. The next game after that was Monza Juventus. So I'll touch on this one. Again, Juventus. Before Di Maria elbowed, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure it was Itzo, right, that he elbowed?
Yeah, it was.
It was, okay. Again, all of us know Itzo's a shit disturber.
Yeah, that's his role.
Yeah, that's his role. He did a good job.
A very good job.
A very good job, yeah. He got Juventus' best player on the field sent off. Best player. Most talented player. How about that? Technical player sent off. He himself, Di Maria himself, admitted that he lost the game because he got sent off. Before that, Juventus were threatening, if I remember correctly. And after the 30th minute, it was all Monza. They managed to score a goal by crossing into the box. Danilo flicking on the cross with Gyomber tapping it home. I mean,
Gyatker. Sorry, who? Gyatker. Gyomber is
the defender. Yeah, right. Yeah. You're right. What's his name?
Gyatker, something like that.
Gyatker.
It's Danish or Norwegian. I'm not the best with their.
For some reason, they all sound the same. But anyway, Gyatker. yeah, you're right. Gyatker. Gyomber is the defender. You're right. And honestly, they did a good job in the sense that after the red card, they put pressure on Vlahovic. They refused to allow Vlahovic to dictate the play, and it worked out to perfection. There should be no excuse other than the red card, of course. I mean, the red card changed the entire game. But in terms of if you take it on the whole and if you don't put the red card into consideration, there's no excuse. I mean, they had their chance. Keane was in front of the net with a header, failed to score, and it came back to haunt him. Yeah. So
it's just with Juve, they've been extremely underwhelming so far this year. They're not even beating the teams they should be beating, which, in my opinion, is the difference between Inter. Yes, Inter have three losses, but they've come away to Lazio. I'm going to throw quotation marks on away to Milan and away to Udinese.
They've
beaten the teams they should be beating.
Yeah, they beat Cremonese. They beat Lecce.
They beat Spezia.
Yeah.
They beat Torino, which, again, wasn't the best game, but they still got 3 points at the end of the day.
Yeah, so with Juventus, they tied Salernitana. Again, we can argue they should have won, etc. But again, put that aside. They didn't beat Salernitana. They lost to Monza. And that was the first loss of the season. We can talk about... I want to talk about the ultra message that came out on Tuesday saying that Bonucci is not a leader. And again, I think that's just repeating what we have been saying on this podcast, and both Juventus fans on this podcast that Bonucci is not a leader. And the fact that they're complaining about that, about Bonucci dragging out the team in front of the curva and subjected them to boos and whistles was not necessarily a quality of a leader. And in a way, they're right. Because if it was up to him, he would be out there himself and protecting the team from that type of abuse and not sharing the responsibility with the rest of the team. The draw against Salernitana, perhaps, but this was a fact of a leadership type of situation. And again, we all know my feelings about Bonucci. He said he was a leader at Inter, was a leader at Spezia, Treviso, Milan, nor Juventus. And they're right. He's not a leader. He's a traitor, in my opinion. The fact that he wanted to leave. And the fact that the problems with Allegri coming from senior players, which... senior players, Bonucci would be included in that discussion. And you could talk about Di Maria not understanding the substitution with Milik. We'll get to that later. But Di Maria getting himself sent off very foolishly by elbowing Itzo in the stomach and the ribs. It was a foolish sending off, which again conditioned the rest of the game. But again, I think it's more than that. If Chiellini was there, I don't think we'll be in this situation.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. Chiellini, I mean, he was the last of the real old guard. As much as I hated playing against him, and Chris, I'm sure you feel the same way, like, you respected him. He kind of controlled everything. He always put his best foot forward, especially in the big games, and he was, quite frankly, a true leader on the field.
Yeah, I was just going to – I agree with what you said. I was also going to add that he's – and I think this is widely accepted anyways – that he was the last of a dying breed of defender, like a true old-school defender. So, yeah, I don't know how much he would have helped Juve this year. I know, obviously, he's a better leader, but – in terms of helping Juve on the pitch, I don't know if that he had much left to offer, but even from a dressing room perspective, I'm sure he would have been able to help in these, you know, times like this where things aren't going well for the club.
So before we get to the rest of the games on Sunday, there was a lot of debate on the post-match television discussions in Italy about Allegri and Inzaghi. So let's ask the question, Julian, you kind of alluded to it earlier. Who's more under pressure, Allegri or Inzaghi?
To me, it's Allegri. As I said, Inzaghi, yes, it's been an underwhelming start to the season, especially with 3 losses so far in 7 games. But I don't think you can blame Inzaghi 100% on the losses, right? Like, I think the team hasn't been playing as well as we know they can. And again, I mentioned last week, whether that's an issue due to ownership, basically saying they can sell anybody at any time. I know he's made his errors. And again, on Sunday, he continued to make his errors. Those 30-minute substitutions were just strange. The De Vrij substitution, I've never seen a player fall off so quickly as De Vrij. Like, he literally went from being a good defender 2 years ago under Conte to being okay last year, now to being, I don't even know. Like, I think I'd rather have Ranocchia on the bench over him. But again, I don't think you can fully blame Inzaghi. He's beating the teams he should be beating. They're only 2 points back of Milan. I know everybody, I see a lot of Inter Twitter, they're hitting the panic button. I mean, we're 2 points back on Milan. We're 5, I think, out of first. You're still in the Champions League. You beat Victoria Pilsen, who you quite frankly needed to beat away. So there are still, as I said, in my opinion, there's no reason to press the panic button yet. I think if things don't improve, which they need to improve, this international break can come at a better time, in my opinion. They need to figure out what's going on defensively because there's a huge, huge issue there. But it's not time to completely freak out and press the panic button. He's still the best man for the job to turn this around. Christian. Whereas Juve, I find, we've been ragging on Allegri since last season. The style of football he plays is just terrible to watch. It doesn't cater to any talented players. It's literally just defend. It's your Cavallo. Like, just get a 1-goal lead and try and defend it for 90 minutes. Like, that's not, especially in modern days now, that's not how you win games. It's not how you kind of grow the team. It just doesn't work.
Chris?
Sorry, so was the question just, who's under more pressure, Allegri or Inzaghi?
Yeah.
I guess at this moment, I would have to go with Allegri. I also recognize that Juventus likely won't be sacking him for, you know, the financial reasons that you and Mike have listed before, but kind of going back to some of the points. Go ahead.
Yeah. So what I read was 80 million.
80?
Yeah. If they sack him.
So, yeah, I mean, factoring that in, I think just, again, the style of play that they've been bringing forward, obviously now there's rumblings that the players aren't happy. I haven't really heard that from the Inter camp yet. I mean, Julian, you would know more, and I don't think there are really too many complaints about Inter's style of play.
No, there were rumors today that the players are still behind them.
Yeah,
management is supposed to sit down over the international break and kind of sort it all out, but their word today was that the players are still behind them.
There you go. So there's that, whereas if on the Juventus side, not so much the same support. On the Inter side, I know Inzaghi's substitutions have been questionable and his starting lineups, but you know Inter's style of play isn't really being questioned like it is with Allegri. So I would say Allegri's under more pressure.
I mean, okay, I think we're all in agreement that Allegri is under the most pressure. And again, that's because he's being paid the most. Again, like I said, if he's sacked, that's 80 million. And that's probably the reason why he won't be sacked. Because I think Nedved is the most visionary. Nedved didn't want to sack Sarri, was skeptical in hiring Pirlo. The fact, again, what happened 3 years ago now is coming back to haunt Juventus. Like I said, the problems that are happening stem from the fact that they sacked Sarri. And I'll continue to push that theory. And it's not even a theory. I think it's more of a fact at this point. Because they shouldn't have sacked him. They sacked him because of a disagreement of personality. And I think Agnelli is going to suffer the ultimate consequence in the future. He already lost his seat as the European club chairman for the European Club Association. He already lost his influence to PSG. And the fact that if he continues to keep losing and making a spectacle of himself, I think he's also going to lose his position as club chairman at Juventus. So I think Agnelli will lose his position earlier than Allegri because of the fact that if Allegri is sacked, like I said, I think it's going to cost Juventus 88 million euros to sack him. So, because of that.
A lot of money.
That is a lot of money and that's a lot of money compared to the fact that Juventus approved their budget for the upcoming season, which contained a loss of 250 million euros.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's no secret. Basically, every Italian team is losing money at this point.
I mean, put it this way. Add an 80 million euro loss on 250 million. We're talking about an annual loss of 320 million. Or 330. I mean, that's not going to stand. That's not going to stand to the shareholders. It's not going to stand to fans. And it's not going to stand to Exor, which is the primary owner of the club. And again, I think the reason why Agnelli hasn't spoken publicly because he knows that his job as club chairman is under threat more than Allegri because Allegri still has a year left.
No, Allegri?
One second. I'm going to take a look at that. I think Allegri still has, 3 years left?
Yeah, I was going to say, he's definitely got more than a year left. Because I feel like he signed a 5-year contract when he came back, and this is year two. This is year two, right? Last year was his first year back?
Yeah, after last season. So 2025.
Right. So three more seasons.
Three more seasons at $7 million per year.
Holy.
So we're what 2022. So we're talking about 20, at least like in terms of like actual contract salary, we're talking about 20 million euros minimum for the rest of the contract. If they sign it, of course. So, again, he's not going to be sacked. I mean, we can talk about all we want. We can talk about Montero taking over. We can talk about Massimo Carrera taking over, which was Conte's assistant at Juventus. Allegri's going to stay. I mean, let's be honest. Look, this I'm talking about as a Juventus fan here. He's going to stay. As much as he deserves to be sacked, yeah, I agree with that. He deserves to be sacked. But again, that's Agnelli's fault of signing a contract that still has 20 million euros to be paid out. And Arriva Bennett, which was Ferrari's principal director, again, Ferrari in the last decade has been absolute ass. So again, yes, let's hire someone who was ass at his job at Formula One to manage the club, and who has been proven to be ass in this situation to manage the club as well. Again, it's an entire situation that Exor themselves have to come in and sort out the situation. So I think we talked about Juventus enough. Let's move on to other games on Sunday.
I was going to say just quickly, in that same vein about replacing coaches. I'm seeing on edge of Twitter like, oh yeah, we should go for Tuchel, we should go for Pochettino, and I'm like, we have no money. We sack Inzaghi, which is why I'm also saying don't sack Inzaghi. We're going to get either Stankovic or Kivu, who's currently coaching the U squad. Those are the two options. It's nobody else.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah, so, like, there's a report that they gave Inzaghi the next month. And that's fair. Because the next month takes you until the international break, in theory.
Yeah, and I agree. That's when they'll know at that point how they're doing in the league. They'll know if they're still in Champions League or not at that point. So
yeah. So if we talk about Inter, they have Roma up next, Barcelona, Inter, Sassuolo.
And Barcelona again after Sassuolo.
Exactly. They play Barcelona twice. So by the international break, okay, so this is Inter's schedule by the international break. Roma, Barcelona, Sassuolo, Barcelona, Salernitana, Fiorentina, Pilsen, Sampdoria, Bayern, Juventus, Bologna, Atlanta. So
yeah, I think you give them, I mean, unless results go really bad, I think you give them till at least that to make a true decision. But unless they're losing like every game, then yeah, something would need to be done. But I honestly don't see that happening.
And again, I think it's the same thing for Juventus. I mean, Serbia is not in, which is nationality. Argentina, whatever. Do you think after Di Maria's performance so far this season, do you think he's going to be called up? Probably not. Pogba's injured. He's not going to be called up. The rest of the Italians are at home, going to be eating panettone themselves. So, do you think anyone at Juventus is going to be called up for the World Cup? Probably not. So again, it's the same thing for Allegri. I mean, probably if you lose against Inter, yeah, of course you sack them. But again, you probably won't, because you probably got to pay them out 80 million euros for the next 3 years. So no, I mean, you can't sack them. We're stuck with them for the season, for the next season at least. I mean, it's unfortunate. And again, I've been banging the drum since we started this podcast saying it was a mistake to sack Sarri. So again, they got to deal with the consequences. I'll watch the games when they're on. It's my club. And I'll support them. But that doesn't mean that I'll say I told you so. Yeah. Again, that's just me.
My condolences, Paulo.
I mean, that's what happens after 10 years of winning. You get decadent and lazy and useless. And the fact that your directors are groping women in clubs. Do I have to say more?
No, I think it's time to move on to the next game.
I mean, it's decadence throughout after 10 years. I mean, it's normal. Anyway, moving on. Lazio beat Cremonese 4-0. Ciro Immobile scored a double in the 7th minute and a PK in the 21st minute. Sergei Milinkovic-Savic scored just before halftime, and Pedro scored in the 79 minutes to round out the 4-0 score. Our next game for a topic of discussion was Roma-Atalanta. So actually, Atalanta scored in the 35th minute with Giorgio Scalfini, which was a nice goal. I know Chris, you and I, we watched that game together. It was a nice goal at the top of the box. So there was a graph that I shared with you, Chris, that Roma has been extremely wasteful in terms of their goal-scoring chances. So what is it? I'll ask you this question. Is it Mourinho or is it the players that should be blamed?
I think when it comes down to a stat like players not, or teams not converting the chances they're getting, I think usually that's got to come down to the players. I think if Roma's stats were showing that they weren't getting a lot of chances, they weren't getting a lot of shots on goal, I think you could blame both the players and the manager, because maybe, you know, their style of play isn't what they need in those moments, in those games. But, you know, the few Roma games that I have watched, you know, again, they are generating, you know, good quality chances, but as you mentioned, they're not putting enough of them away. So I think that comes down to the quality of the players.
Again, we'll get into Europe later, but like I remember in that game, Tammy Abraham had a golden opportunity, which kind of, I don't know how to describe it. He tapped it wide.
Yeah, I don't think he, or who was the goalkeeper? Was it Sportiello at that point?
I think so, because Musa got hit in the face.
Yeah, so anyways, Sportiello, whoever the goalkeeper was at that point, did come sprinting out to close down the lane, but I think we agreed that, you know, Abraham definitely should have done better to score that one. And yeah, I guess you're right. He did kind of roll it wide because the goalkeeper didn't touch it.
So, Julian, I remember you were texting earlier that Mourinho was suspended for Inter Roma as well as last season, and again this season. And I believe in the post-match press conference, he said, quote, well, quote, paraphrasing here, that his team should act like clowns to win PKs. What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't think he's wrong. I feel like there's a lot of stuff that doesn't get called because players... There's a lot of stuff that doesn't get called because players are too honest, and then there's a lot of stuff that does get called because players flop, quite frankly. Now, again, with the introduction of VAR, we see it. If there's contact, a player goes to ground, it's an automatic PK. And again, by the letter of the law, then yes, that is the rule. But I don't know. I've always been one where it's under the impression if you're touched, soccer, it's still a contact sport. If you're touched, but it doesn't cause you to go to ground, it shouldn't necessarily be foul. If it doesn't impede you in any way, it shouldn't really be a foul, but of course players in the box are always going to go down. So I do understand what he's saying. Obviously, I hope they don't do it against Inter. But yeah, I know what he's talking about.
I mean, there was one episode where Zaniolo, Zaniolo was fouled, but it was outside the box, and he didn't go down. I think, Chris, you remember that, right? But again, he was outside the box, and replays confirmed that he was outside the box. But then there was another episode where he was inside the box, and it was a blatant dive. And, Chris, I think you and I were surprised that he wasn't even carded, because that was quite the blatant dive.
Yeah, that's generally – sorry to cut you off. That's generally how it goes. If the ref's not going to call a penalty for a foul on the defender and, you know, it was a clear dive, which it was in this case, that then he should have gotten a yellow. So, yeah, we were both surprised that nothing was given there.
So, again, I don't want to keep talking about Roma here, but we've got to give some credit to Atalanta. They had a game plan of pushing Roma deep into their box. I forget who was the player that went one-on-one with Ibanez, and again was pushed them deep into close to their 6-yard box, and then allowed Scalvini all that room at the top of the box to score that goal to make it 1-0. So credit to Atalanta, that had a game plan of attacking Roma's weak links, which in my opinion is Ibanez, is the fact that they can't finish, even though they brought in Belotti as well, who came on. So again, Roma are showing weakness, not the fact that they can't create any opportunities and just are parking the bus, but the fact that they can't finish, which is I guess rare for a Mourinho squad, right, Chris?
Yeah, that's fair.
So, I mean, it's a very odd season so far, which we'll get into the final game of the weekend. But to say that a Mourinho squad can't finish, and the fact that they're creating opportunities but they're not finishing them, which is a whole conversation in evidence of itself, the fact. Because usually people say that Mourinho just parks the bus and doesn't create anything. So that's just a weird twilight zone that we're living in. Anyway, the next game, the final game of the weekend was Milan-Napoli, Chris.
Yeah, a couple of game notes before we review the game. Missing for Napoli, of course, was Osimhen through injury and Spalletti through suspension. And then for Milan, Leao missing also through suspension from his red card in the previous match day. So first half was quite entertaining. I think for the most part, Milan had the better chances. I don't have the possession stats in front of me, but I would probably guess it tilted slightly in Napoli's favor. But there was a chance, you know, quite early on, a nice little reverse pass actually from Krunic into Giroud. And it just gets tipped right over the crossbar. And then not too long after that, there was a cross into the Napoli's back post for Krunic, who I thought did well to get up for a header. So another good chance there. And speaking of Krunic, I know I bring this up most times that he starts. I was, you know, surprised and disappointed to see him start, especially as a winger in this big match against, you know, two undefeated teams near the top of the table. So I'll keep bringing that up until the day Milan can, you know, replace him, but I'll move on. The first goal though came for Napoli, specifically Politano on a pen. The foul was Dest on Kvaratskhelia, who continues to not just play well, but he's just so dangerous with the ball at his feet when he's dribbling at defenders. You know, it's very clear that he's happy to go left. He's happy to go right. And he does it with exceptional pace. So I can't imagine having to defend him 1v1. And unfortunately Dest, you know, was unsuccessful in that duel, fouled Kvaratskhelia, penalty to Politano. I don't think it was a well taken pen. I feel like Napoli fans might agree with me besides the fact that it went in. It was just left of center. I think Mania, you know, was obviously expecting it to go more towards the corner. So he was in a full stretch and it kind of just tucks under him. So that made it 1-0. A just over 10 minutes later, Teo Hernandez down the left-hand side, as we would expect him to be, crosses it on the ground, does a lot of the hard work there, and it was a tap-in for Giroud. And then the 78th minute, the game-winning goal from Giovanni Simeone, crossed in, I believe, from Zielinski. It was actually a great glancing. What's that, sorry?
I think it was Mario Rui.
Rui, you crossed it? Okay. Yeah. It was a great glancing header. I would have to criticize Tomori a little bit. He seemed to be about 5 yards off of Simeone. I'm not saying that Tomori could have won the ball or should have won the ball, but if he's tighter to Simeone, he probably doesn't get a chance to direct the header the way he did on the goal. Again, I don't want to take anything away from Simeone because, again, it was a great header. Those are difficult to score. But, yeah, so it finishes 2-1. Napoli remain undefeated. They hand Milan their first loss of the season. And now we have a bit of separation there at the top of the table with Napoli and Udinese, as we touched on earlier.
So, Julian, did you watch the game, Julian?
No, I did not. I did see the game-winning goal and the Giroud goal, but I unfortunately didn't have time to watch.
Okay, so, Chris, we watched that game together. Mm-hmm. It was a penalty.
Yeah, I changed my mind. Once I saw that one angle, it was a pen. I wasn't happy about it, but
okay, so what was hilarious, I just want to mention this because the, you know, I was watching pressing on Mediaset on Monday, and there's the commentator for Milan TV, Mario Suma, who was making the argument that it wasn't a PK. And again, it was pretty obvious. If you look at the replays in neutral, Dest kicks Kvaratskhelia's foot, which forces him to kick the ball out. I don't understand how you can argue that that's not a PK.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, when we were watching it, the first 5 or 6 replays were coming from the near side of the pitch. And on those replays, I didn't see a foul. But then, of course, they show it from, you know, almost from the net angle. And on that one, you can clearly see Dest hit Kvaratskhelia's foot. And then Kvara's foot knocks the ball out of bounds. So
yeah,
it's a penalty.
So I don't know if you recall, Chris, early in the season, we said cause we didn't want to look at the table for Serie A until after 10 games. Like what we take Allegri's words as the gospel, right?
Sure.
But we did say who will have the best start during the 10 games, correct?
Yes, I remember us discussing it anyways.
Yeah. So we did say Napoli.
Yeah, I think we agreed that just more recent seasons they have started off strong, and as I think Julian pointed out last week or 2 weeks ago, that they get off to these strong starts usually, you know, leading up to Christmas, and then they kind of falter after that. So
the Spalletti effect.
Yeah, exactly. So no, I can't say I'm surprised Napoli have got off to a good start. I will say I am surprised and happily surprised for Napoli and their supporters that Kvaratskhelia's started as well as he has, and one player, and I mean he's a defender, defenders usually get overlooked and don't get the credit they deserve, is Kim Min-jae. I think he's been exceptional so far. I had seen videos of his defending and how strong he was, you know, in that part of the game, which was obviously crucial for center backs and defenders in general, but he's played a big role with Napoli playing out from the back as well. He's been composed and, you know, obviously Spalletti's trusted him to anchor that back line. So that's been a phenomenal signing, a phenomenal pickup for them.
Julian?
No, I agree. I mean, I didn't have Napoli even finishing in my top 7, to be honest, because
I don't think
quite frankly, I didn't know any of their signings, right? Like, to me, they got rid of their core of their team and replacing them with guys I had never heard of. I'll be 100% honest. But, hey, I've been proven quite clearly wrong. So good on them. Yeah. I mean, I'll always have respect for Spalletti with what he did with Inter. Wish them nothing but the best, to be honest.
So for me, it was, the fact that Kvaratskhelia won the PK, Simeone with a nice header. The fact that Laporta has been playing that well, has been the metronome of that Napoli side, creating and just driving that midfield. We would have thought with Fabian Ruiz leaving, etc., that Napoli would have struggled in that part of the field. But I think everyone's been proven wrong. And last season, I think there was a bunch of jokes that Laporta was fat and overweight all of last season. And Spalletti has proven everyone wrong. And the fact that if he did get Laporta in shape and ready for the upcoming season, that he would be one of their best players in the squad. And I think he is this season. And again, we'll see. We don't want to make any predictions after 10 games or after 7 games. And we'll talk about the season, the league table after 10 games. But we have to make a comment on the fact that they're the only team. I believe they're the only team undefeated, correct? If I'm not wrong.
Wouldn't Udinese be undefeated as well?
No, I think
they lost. Didn't Milan beat them in the first game?
Yeah, they did.
Right. Yes. Okay. Forgot about that already.
No, Atlanta's still undefeated. So it's Napoli, Atlanta, both with 17 points, still undefeated.
Sorry, one thing, just to go back to Laporta, I agree with what you were saying. One player who I, was used to seeing last year for Napoli was Diego Demme. But he's
injured.
Correct. Yeah. So, I don't know if Laporta was in Spalletti's ideal 11 from the get-go, but obviously he's taking advantage. This is Laporta I'm referring to. He's taking advantage of, Demme being out and getting some more minutes in that midfield, and it's going to be difficult for Demme to work himself back in if he keeps playing like that.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the, top 8, top 10, actually. So Napoli and Atalanta tied with 17 points. Udinese with 16 points. Lazio 14. Milan in fifth with 14. Roma 13. Inter 12. Juventus 8th with 10 points. Torino in 9th with 10 points. And Fiorentina in 10th with 9 points. The last 4, so Verona in 17th with 5 points. Monza with their first win in Serie A ever against Juventus, which is quite incredible. Let's put it that way. What club can say that they beat Juventus with their first win ever in Serie A against the Bianconeri? And with a former Bianconeri player as their manager, with Raffaello Palladino, which I'm pretty sure was a former youth player as well. And of course, owner Silvio Berlusconi took responsibility for the win.
Of course he did. Yeah.
So moving on, Cremonese 19th with 2 points and Sampdoria bottom with 2 points as well. So there is obviously discussions with Sampdoria. So before we take a break, there was discussion with Sampdoria. Gianpaolo was under discussion, as well as the fact that Sampdoria may be sold to a Qatari investor. So we'll see. This is something to look over the break. The fact that, it's odd. I kind of want to talk about it right now before we get into the 10 games. The fact that we break for international for the upcoming, 10 days, and then break again mid-November. It's just odd. For me, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that they couldn't do this before the World Cup and have it all at the same time instead of having a break a month before. They have to go on another fucking break for a month and a half. But again, that's just the way it is. But again, that's just the sign of the times and the fact that there is a World Cup in the Middle East at this time of the year. So that, before we get on to other subjects, that's Serie A for round 7. We're going to take a quick break and come back with European club competitions for match day 2. And we'll see. We'll have maybe we'll have some sort of special trivia. We'll have a little bit of fun amongst ourselves. And maybe we'll bash Roberto Mancini before we end this episode. So we'll be right back with a quick break.
Ritorna al mar dove ho sognato con te e sembra dirmi ciao. Ciao, rivedo ancora i vecchi amici che ho e mi salutano. Ciao, ciao, e sulla piaggia limpida non è cambiato niente. Sto qui sole e caldo, io ti cerco tra la gente. So che ci sei. Ecco, mi hai vista e tu mi vieni incontro correndo e stai sorridendomi. Ciao, ciao, grido chiamandoti. Ciao, ciao, amore abbracciami. Ciao, ciao, sono soldata da te.
Sorry, Paolo, I think the English version is better than the one.
I was about to say, I was like, do you know which song that was in English, right?
Yes.
I go back, my brain goes back to Seinfeld. It's like, with George and Jerry in the diner saying, you know, lights are brighter downtown. Anyway. but no, I mean, it's, do you really think it's better downtown? Downtown. But it's, downtown. Is it better downtown, Julian?
Is it better downtown? I mean, when you're ages 18 to 25, yes. After that, probably not.
I don't know. To me, like I said, like last week, I wanted to bring songs that were covered in English in Italian. You know what I mean? So I think that's one of the songs as an example. So, ciao, ciao. Anyway, to that point, let's get into Europe. Match day 2. Let's start with Champions League, of course. Julian, Inter played Victoria Pilsen.
So, Inter, yeah, they lost their first game to Bayern 2-0. The Victoria Pilsen game was a must-win game if they wanted to have any shot at finishing second in the group. So they were away, actually, in the Czech Republic, but they came through with a nice, clean 2-0 win. First goal from Dzeko, second goal from Dumfries. Now, I did mean to touch on this when I was talking a little bit back with Inter in the first segment. I think something needs to be changed. In my opinion, as I mentioned after the Milan derby, I think that change is Onana for Handanovic just as the out-and-out starter. I think that sends enough of a message. Plus, Onana, in my opinion, as he's proved in his 2 Champions League starts, is the better keeper at this point in time. But we can kind of move past that. Inter now have 2 games against Barcelona, back-to-back, a home and home. So those are 2 very important games that will decide whether or not they advance in the Champions League this year.
So, Chris, Milan played Zagreb.
So this was, I don't want to say an open first half, but it was a bit more free-flowing than I guess I'm used to with other Milan matches. The first goal came right before halftime. Leao was taken down in the box, and Giroud put that away. So Milan went into the break up 1-0. And then essentially right after the kickoff at the start of the second half, Leao makes his way down his favored left-hand side, whips a cross in with his left foot, and of all people, Alexi Salamakers was there to head it away. Not an easy header, I guess I'll put it that way. It was driven in. Defender was close to him, and he was able to tuck it in just under the bar. Zagreb did make it interesting, though. 56th minute, Petkovic, Zagreb's number 9, he had a fancy little turn just inside the box, kind of slips it through for Mislav Orsic, who I believe also scored against Chelsea. And he had a nice little finish as well. So that made it 2-1. But then Tommaso Pobega scored in the 77th minute to make it 3-1. And that kind of buried the game. I still want to check if that's Pobega's first senior goal for Milan, because he, as we know, he was on loan the past two seasons with Spezia and Torino. And I know he didn't get much playing time before those loans. That might have been his first senior goal for Milan. But nonetheless, Milan came away with the win. And then just also to note, Chelsea tied Salzburg in the other game in the group. So Milan are first in the group right now. Zagreb still sitting at 3 after they beat Chelsea match day 1. Chelsea get their first points, and Salzburg are in third place, I guess, with 2 points.
Just taking a look for that goal, but check. I mean, again, we'll talk about Juventus. Milik scored early, and then Benfica took control of that game. And I get, we can probably discuss that, the fact that is definitely similar to what happened against Monza, and the fact that they had a good start, destroyed their momentum by something stupid, and blowing the game. I don't know if we mentioned, I believe I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, and the fact that Juventus Curva shot on Bonucci, and here it was rightly so, because after this game, Di Maria and Milik were discussing the fact that Milik was subbed off, and Di Maria is questioning why he was subbed off. And that has led to discussions about the players not having confidence in Allegri. And again, rightly so. But these are things that should not be played out in public. These are things that should be played out on the training ground. And you know, it's unfortunate the fact that it's being played out in public, and especially because Juventus have 2 games against Maccabi Haifa that, again, honestly, if you need a reason to sack Allegri, if you don't beat Maccabi Haifa 2 games in a row, then yeah, rightly so, you should be sacked. I think we're all in agreement here.
Yeah.
In terms of results. So we'll see. We'll see if it's possible. Again, In terms of the financial situation, I agree with Juventus not sacking him. But if they look at the results, then yes, they should sack him on the spot. But again, you know my feeling. I've been saying since the start, the fact that they sacked Sarri after winning a Scudetto is what has led them in this situation. So that's that. The last game for an Italian team in Champions League, Napoli beat Rangers 3-0 in Scotland. And this was a game where, before the game started, there was a, I guess you can call it commemoration, yes,
yeah,
for Queen Elizabeth II. UEFA instructed Rangers and any British team not to play the British national anthem. That was obviously rejected and ignored. And they eventually played God Save the King, unfortunately. If I have to say anything personal. But anyway, I don't want to get anything any more political. I think I explained it there. So again, Napoli beating both British teams in the group. Six important points. I think Napoli are in control of this group. They play
Ajax
next. That's the other strong team in this group. If they come away with a win, 9 points out of the first three games, I think they're well suited in qualifying from the group stage. I think we're all in agreement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So do you have anything else to say about the Champions League group stage match day two?
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, no, so, I think we're good.
So moving on to Europa League, what I found interesting was that Lazio got their ass handed to them by a Danish team. Last season, Roma got smacked by a Norwegian team, Bodo Glimt 6-1. And this season, a Danish team, Midtjylland, beat them 5-1.
Was this an away match?
Yes, it was. It was an away match in Denmark. And actually, Lazio reimbursed the tickets of the fans that traveled to Denmark for this game. But yeah, it was... I watched this game. I followed along. Lazio were only in this game when they scored that goal. And the rest of the game, it was just Midtjylland just dominating and just putting Lazio to the sword in this game. And well done, Lazio, for refunding the price of the ticket, the fact that they got absolutely hammered in that game. So the other Roman team in that tournament is Roma, of course. They beat HJK Helsinki 3-0. They got actually a red card in that game.
14th minute, yeah.
The 14th minute, which again dictated the result of that game. They actually had to bring on Dybala at halftime to actually secure the result. And I believe in the 68th minute, Belotti got his first goal as a Roma player. So they redeemed their poor performance against Ludogorets with an important win against Helsinki. And it sets them up for the upcoming games in the next round. So Lazio play
Sorry, while you're looking that up, Paula, yeah. I would just add, so that red card that HJK got was in the 14th minute, and I can't say that Roma looked sharp.
Good, yeah.
The rest of that first half, it if you didn't know any better, you would have assumed it was still 11v11, and then, like you said, it wasn't until Dybala came on at halftime that the game really changed, and of course the second half Roma took over. But it's, I don't want to say disappointing, but you would have hoped that a team with Roma's quality wouldn't have needed, to bring on, their most talented player at halftime to turn the game around against, let's be honest, a minnow who's down a man. So obviously the 3 points, they still got it, and that's what's most important. But that 30 minutes in the first half there where they were up a man was not fun to watch.
No, it wasn't fun. It was entertaining. It goes back to what we discussed last week, the fact that they've been having trouble creating opportunities with that three-man defense. And they changed at halftime. I believe they took off Avinia for Dybala. It makes sense because they were Helsinki was down to 10 men. So to put on another striker to win the game, of course, it makes sense. But you could also apply that theory to the game against Atalanta, and the fact that they struggled to finish against Atalanta. So this is something that Mourinho has to look at, and the fact that he has to change formations mid game, and to change formations to change the result mid game. Because, you know, allowing Helsinki to be in the game until halftime and to allow Atalanta to put pressure on for the first 35 minutes of the game, it doesn't bode well. The fact that you have to play Inter right after international break. So there's that. So as I was saying before, Chris, Lazio play Sturm Graz in Austria, and Roma play. Let's see here. Roma play Real Betis, which is, I'm pretty sure, one of the stronger teams in that group. So moving on to the Conference Leagues, Chris. So Fiorentina lost 3-0 against Istanbul Başakşehir. Honestly, the highlight of the game was Golini's
absolute Choco Bonito.
Yeah, Choco Bonito. I have no idea what he was looking at, but
he's watching too many videos of that old Colombian goalkeeper. I feel bad, I don't remember his name, but he used to was it Valderrama? No.
Yeah, it was Valderrama.
Yeah. I guess he's watching some of his highlight videos, but no, that I'm sure Italiano was pulling his hair out.
His beard hair.
Yeah.
His beard hair. I was supposed to say whatever hair he has left, right? Yeah, so. But you know, but that was absolutely that was a disaster class right there, and what was hilarious was, of course, at the beginning of the season, or at the end of last season. Fiorentina fans were setting themselves up for making fun of Roma fans or making fun of Roma for winning a European title that doesn't mean anything, etc. And the fact that they're still winless.
Yeah, they're last.
And they're still winless in Europe.
They've got, I don't want to say they have to win the rest of their games, but
they probably should. They probably will have to
at get least out three. Of, yeah. Win at least three. And that's just to get into second.
To get into second, so yeah. They don't have to play, but they still have to play the second place team in Europa League.
Exactly. Yeah. So, obviously winning the group is the priority, but at this point, I think they'll just be happy to finish second because unless Istanbul, you know, loses two of their last four games, I don't see how Fiorentina will come out on top, but you never know. Obviously, I'd love them to come out on top. It's just not realistic based on the first two results.
So again, the greatest competition on earth should not be taken lightly is the moral of the story.
Correct.
So that's that. That's European club competition match day 2 wrapped up. Do we have anything else that we wanted to talk? Here's a chance before I get into Serie B minute, Scarlet Culture, to bring up anything before I wrap it up.
I'll just go quickly. The Canadian men's national team are playing Qatar on Friday, so September 23rd. Obviously a World Cup tune-up match, so looking forward to watching that match. It's showing 1 p.m. Eastern time.
What day?
This coming Friday, September 23rd.
Okay.
1 p.m. Eastern.
And again,
that's it.
Yeah.
For me.
Julian?
No, I don't have much to go on other than just Inter fans. I know we're used to kind of reacting, and especially under Moratti, it was just as soon as something's going wrong, sack the manager. But just be a little calm. We're still winning the games we should be winning. I think Inzaghi's still the best option to try and turn this around.
Yeah, because they, I think Gazzetta dello Sport posted the top 12 managers that are unemployed, and Stankovic is actually number 12. So we'll see.
Exactly my point.
Yeah, so we refuse. We're boycotting this international break. I think we're all in agreement that I think that there's no point of discussing this international break because it's absolutely fucking useless. I think until Mancini is sacked, in my opinion, I think are we all agreed on that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So because of that, we're refusing to talk about this in upcoming international break. I think we'll get into the Serie B minute before I actually lose my shit talking about the international break. So again, so Serie B minute, Brescia beat Benevento 1-0. So Benevento here is important because I believe it was Monday, Tuesday, where Benevento have been finalizing a deal to bring in Fabio Cannavaro. Yes, that Fabio Cannavaro as their manager. So we'll see how that plays out for the rest of the season. Frosinone beat Palermo 1-0. Como tied Spal 3-3. Cagliari lost 1-0 to Bari. Reggina beat Cittadella 3-0. Venezia tied Pisa 1-1. Genoa beat Modena 1-0. The upcoming games are the most important games, in my opinion. Spal versus Genoa, Modena versus Reggina, Cagliari versus Venezia, Parma versus Frosinone, and Bari versus Brescia. So the top two teams so far, because again, we won't discuss the rest of the table until after match day 10. The top two teams that are still, again, I believe, undefeated, Brescia and Reggiana with 15 points. And of course, because we all have Abruzzese heritage, I guess you can call it, Virtebese lost 1-0 to Pescara, and Pescara have 3 wins and 1 loss so far this season in Serie, until in Lega Pro. So that's it. I think we discussed all we had to. Again, we're boycotting the international break until after the World Cup because it's bullshit that Roberto Mancini still has a job. The fact that he failed to qualify for the World Cup twice in a row. We believe as a podcast that he should have been sacked after failing to qualify. So we're not going to touch it because it's absolute bullshit. So again, we'll be back next week. Again, because we're having that boycott, we'll just have some fun, right, Chris?
Yes.
We'll talk about Canada, and we'll talk about Canada's chances in the upcoming World Cup. I guess we'll preview Canada's chances in the upcoming World Cup. How about that?
We can do that, yeah.
Excellent. I'm excited for that. And perhaps, Julian, I think you know more than me, is Michael back next week? I don't know.
He should be back next week, yes.
He should be back next week. So, again, well, it could be the last week of me hosting. So, again, enjoy it this week before Michael comes back. And again, we'll have fun next week, and the fact that we don't have to worry about truly international break. We can have fun. We can talk about Canada. We can talk about Canada chances. we can hypothesize for the upcoming World Cup. And